Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I am Michelle Berquist, your host today of Women Who Lead on Women Leading the Way Radio. Woo, that's a lot of leading. Guess what? We have a leading lady today. I am so excited to introduce our guest, our leading lady, who is Jayla Siciliano, who is the CEO and founder of a really cool name, a wine company called Bonafaire. And what you guys need to know about Jayla is that she has been on Shark Tank and actually has been picked up by one of the sharks, Mark Cuban. So we're excited to hear about her journey. But Jayla, welcome aboard. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, and I also got to say, out of full disclosure, excited only because I know you a lot now. I'm getting to know you a lot more. But you were one of our award recipients for the 2015 Women of Influence Awards as the Emerging Woman-Owned Business of the Year. So congratulations on that again, because that was a high honor.
Yeah, I was so surprised. Thank you so much. That was awesome.
Well, I love your product, and I want to talk to everybody because, you know, there's not enough wine out there is my personal opinion. We always can have more wine in our lives, but you've got a real unique twist to your business for Bonafaire. And tell us a little bit about your wine, because it's a wine spritzer, am I right?
Correct, yeah. So it's basically kind of a lighter, healthier option. It's made with California wine. We use natural mineral spring water. And so it's 6.5% alcohol, which is more than beer but less than wine. It has zero sugar, no added sugar, no fake sugar. And we added electrolytes because we figured, why not?
I love the why not part. But I'm curious, it's like, now, I guess I didn't know. You're saying your wine spritzers. How did you come up with this formula? I mean, was this like your scientific genius to figure out the combination of no sugar and electrolytes and those kinds of things in your wine spritzers? Was this your baby, your child?
Yeah, it was. I talked to a lot of winemakers, some beverage specialists, people who specifically do product development, flavor specialists, and stuff like that, and kind of came up with the formula with them, because the main thing I wanted to do was really keep it a dry, crisp, light taste, which is where, you know, the no sugar piece came into it. And we used some vegan and natural flavors in there just to enhance it a little bit. But yeah, it took about a year and a half to develop the final kind of product.
And I've actually tasted, you know, at some of our events that we've had, and I'm just like, oh, wow, it's amazing. But, you know, I know for a lot of our listeners are going, wait, back up, Michelle, back up. You mentioned Shark Tank. You mentioned Mark Cuban. You know, that is obviously one of the most hottest shows going on for entrepreneurs. You know, can you kind of share with our listeners, I mean, what in the world, you know, caused you to apply? What was that like? And, oh, my God, I can't even imagine, you know, what it was like then to get picked up by a shark and none other than Mark Cuban. What was that like, and why the heck did you apply for that? You must have been crazy.
I know. I still can't believe I did it, actually.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, my past career was in product development and design for bags and shoes, worked for Diesel Footwear and Burton Snowboard. So I had no idea what I was getting into. I had this idea. I was drinking wine spritzers, you know, while I was there because it was a very heavy social drinking environment. And I've always been really active and healthy. So I started making wine spritzers. My friends started asking for them. And I saw this as a need on the market. So I quit my job, literally thought I'd have it off the ground in a year. You know, figured I'd be making all this money and blah, 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 and just be, you know, rolling in the business. And right. It took a lot longer than I expected. It's been over 6 years now. And basically, when I got started, as I mentioned, I was developing the product, and then I ended up going back to school for my MBA. And while I was there, I realized I really need to raise more money. At this point, I'd gone through credit cards, my 401k, savings. I was back to bartending at night. And it was rough. While I was at USC, I started pitching investors, and it took me another year to raise the first $500,000 to launch. And so I raised that money, which was not easy. It was through private investors that I didn't know before. It just basically took a lot of networking and a lot of persistence. And once I closed that funding, we were ready to go. I hired employees, you know, in an office, and we designed the website, the product, the packaging, all that stuff. We went to launch, and the bottler, it was the only bottler that would take us, and basically they were in a downward spiral, and I didn't realize it. They had a good reputation, but they were kind of going downhill, and I got caught in that downward spiral. So everything that they bottled, the caps were leaking. So we started shipping our first boxes, and the boxes were showing up. Soaking wet because the caps were leaking. So almost had to close the doors. My existing investors said, if you find a new bottler, we'll put in enough money for a new production run. So it took me 6 months. I found a new bottler. Ironically, it was someone I had talked to before, and they wouldn't take me before, but now that, you know, we kind of had a nice fancy website, I think we looked more legit, and they decided to take us this time. So we found a new bottler, and I had a new production run lined up and getting ready to go, but I had no marketing money. I had no budget for anything else. And one of my advisors kept saying, you need to apply to Shark Tank. You need to apply to Shark Tank. And I was like, I don't want to go on that show. And finally, after having lunch with him one day, I went back to the office and I was like, you know, I just need to apply to get Tim off my back. And so I sent an email and to the info@sharktank, you know, .com or whatever it was. And 4 months later, I got a call back, and they said, you've been approved to go to the next, you know, round screening. And so sent in a video and then jumped through a bunch of hoops and finally got in front of the sharks. And at that point, I only had $10,000 of sales. So I was barely just really getting started. And fortunately, Mark Cuban made me an offer because I barely got out of there. The other four sharks said no, and then Mark made an offer, which was amazing. So it was a crazy experience, yeah.
Well, and I've got so many questions going back to that. Because, you know, I mean, there's so many entrepreneurs that, you know, you talk to anybody who's in business, Taylor, and they'll go, oh, yeah, I watch Shark Tank. And, you know, I mean, what is the process like, if you don't mind sharing? And I even want to go backwards from that. You mentioned that you had private investors who, you know, gave you a cool $500,000. What was that process like to do? I mean, did you do pitch presentations? Is that what you were involved in with pitch fests and things like that while you were in school? Or you said you had to network to find investors. Kind of share with everybody what that was like, because it is kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's not easy. And I think, you know, the hardest thing is finding people who are actually looking for an early stage, high risk investment. They have liquid cash and they believe in you and your product. It's tough to find those people. So while I was at USC, I did my first business plan competition while I was there. And that kind of helped me get my pitch deck and my business plan together. And simultaneously, I started working with an organization in San Diego called SDSI, San Diego Sports Initiative. And there's organizations like that all over the country. And they're kind of an incubator, but not really, you know, you don't have to pay to be there. It's a free service. But finding someone who can really help you put that initial pitch deck together and business plan, I think, is the key that got me started. And once I had that, then I just started reaching out to anybody, going to networking events. And I found it's really just putting it out there, confidently saying, I'm raising money for my business. If you know anybody that might be interested, you know, my two-second elevator pitch of what it was. And then, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I know somebody who's an investor. They might be interested. And the people I ended up finding, I found through like five different connections until I finally got, every time I'd go into a meeting, you know, if someone said, oh, no, I'm not really interested, it's not for me, you know, I'd always leave saying, do you know anybody else who might be interested? If you could introduce me to anybody else, that would be amazing. So it just takes a lot of, you know, just really talking to people is what I found kind of did the trick. And it still wasn't easy. I ended up doing, you know, it was from two private investors, and I did a combination of equity and convertible notes. There's a million different ways to structure it. So I had a couple advisors that I found along the way who really helped me to kind of avoid some of the pitfalls on the legal side of getting, you know, early stage kind of initial investment, which I think is really important too.
No, and I think you're giving some good advice. I mean, I love it because, you know, we all know business owners that, like, would like to have money or think that investors might be the road to go. I think some of us, and if I can say me included, you know, our kind of assumption is always angels are the way to go, but typically they look for high-tech, high-growth businesses. And I know for you, you've got a consumer product, you know, I mean, and an amazing one. But when you look back over what you went through, I mean, how did you – you know, when you went through USD, was it connections that they led you to advisors? I've heard their program is really good at USD, but how did you find those advisors who kind of counseled you, you know, on your business plan and all of that? Or was it just from your schooling at USD?
How did I find my advisors? Yeah, I think, again, it was just through going to different networking events. A couple of them were through USD connections. One of my professors had introduced me to someone. Another one was actually a guy that I worked with on developing Bonafair. He had his own business, beverage company in the past, and he'd actually gotten burned by kind of investors. So he had a lot of good advice on kind of what not to do and what to be careful of. So, yeah, it was really just talking to people and networking to ask, you know, And then just asking for advice from people, I think, is putting it out there.
You know, well, one of the things I love about you and knowing you is that you keep saying I'm an open book, you know, and I'm like, what I'm charmed with, if I can say this about you, you've got a phenomenal product, and we're going to give you a chance to let people know if they want to buy some Bonafair wine spritzers. You know, you've got, I know people can purchase online, but I'm kind of curious, what are some of the biggest, you know, learning lessons that you had, you know, in the very beginning where you have the bottler, you know, and then, I mean, I can't even imagine, most people would be doing the happy dance, getting $500,000, but did the investors walk away, or was it just because you had such a fallout with the wine leaking as you sent it, then you had to refund money, and it was almost like a no sale kind of thing? What was it that, you know, were the biggest kind of learning lessons that you had from that experience?
I'd say the biggest learning lesson that I had was I could have spent money differently, and now I look at my costs and how I spend money a lot differently than I did in the beginning, in the sense that I really am very, very careful about what I spend money on. In the beginning, I think, you know, we were developing point-of-sale materials and marketing materials and a lot of stuff that we didn't really need until we knew we had a product we could sell. And, you know, the other thing I've learned is that I could look back and I could say, what should I have done differently, you know, at that bottling run to avoid that? But I had my advisors involved. I called a lot of, you know, experts kind of in to – because it was a number of issues. It was unbelievable. The first 5,000 bottles that came off the line had tomato juice floating in them. I mean, I could go on and on. It was it was ridiculous.
My gosh.
So it was about you know, a month long process of losing all this product. And you know what I've learned is that sometimes it's just part of business. These obstacles are going to come up. And as now, I also try to look at, you know, you want to be really positive and think big, but it's also really important to look at, okay, what are the risks and what would we do right now, you know, if the worst case scenario happens? And I wasn't really looking at that. One thing I assumed the whole time was that we would have a product to sell. Even, you know, multi-million, billion-dollar companies have product recalls and production issues, and in the consumer product business, it's a big risk. And so now I kind of look at those risks a lot different, and I look at my spending, you know, and how it relates to those risks a lot more carefully than I did before. I think that's probably the biggest lesson. I think
that's really good advice. And, you know, I mean, again, I know that a lot of our listeners are going to be going, oh, my God, what was it like to be on Shark Tank? Because, you know, I actually know another company, a colleague of mine, that they had a water bottle that they were on Shark Tank for. And they kind of just explained how, oh, my gosh, it was so stressful. You know, I mean, here's the do's and don'ts of it. You know, it really is like being in a Shark Tank. So can you just share with everybody what was the preparation like to be on Shark Tank? I know everybody's wanting to know that.
Yeah, so I prepared like crazy. I pretended it was like a huge final. So I was waking up the month before watching Shark Tank videos at 4 a.m., practicing my pitch. I think my husband knew my pitch as well as I did from listening to it so many times. And I did a lot of yoga leading up to it, and I was just trying to visualize and, you know, think, stay calm and be positive and all that stuff. And then, you know, you're in kind of the little back room getting ready to go in there, and it just happens really quickly. And you get out there, and there is, I will say, you do not get to meet the sharks ahead of time. They know nothing about you. They only know your first name, and they see your set up there. And so you walk out, and it went by so fast. I was in there for an hour. I think the thing you can't tell on TV is that they're all kind of firing questions at you at the same time. So the hardest part is knowing who to answer. And it just went by so fast. I remember, I think it was Damon or Mr. Wonderful went out first, one of them. And I just remember thinking, oh, my God, they don't know enough about my business yet or me. Like, how can they go out already? And I realized since, you know, that's why they're in there, because they're able to assess, analyze, and make a quick decision on if they think it's the right fit for them or not, which is pretty impressive. I was in there for about an hour. It went by super fast. And then, you know, you shake, you make the deal. You leave going, holy cow, did that really happen? and the worst part is you cannot talk about it. So I filmed my episode in September, and it didn't air until May. So it was torture. The only person I told was my husband. And by the time it aired, I was just so happy to not have to keep it a secret anymore. I didn't even care what happened from the show. I was just happy to not have to keep it a secret. But we did actually close the deal. Oh, go ahead.
I think I would have exploded if that would have been me to hold something in like that for that long. I mean, that's crazy. September until May the next year.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, you know, people are saying, how's your business? I'm like, oh, it's good. We have some good things happening. But we did close the deal with Mark before it aired, and he started kind of helping out right away. And he has been amazing to work with. You know, I expected maybe to just get an introduction once in a while, but he's been way more hands-on than I ever expected. He gives advice on everything from customer service to website to, you know, big picture planning. And he's got a team of people. They do our finances now. And I just can't believe that somebody at his level, you know, takes the time to help out entrepreneurs like myself. He doesn't have to do it. And it's pretty amazing that he's willing to, you know, really help people move their businesses forward. It's really, really cool. So I think it's a great show. After going through the process, it's an amazing show.
Well, and I'm kind of, you know, again, this, I know we're all over the place, but, you know, one thing I think that would be important, and I bet you have kind of an idea of it, but when you look at all the sharks that were listening to your pitch, it's like, what do you think got Mark's attention so much that either you said or you did, or that you feel hit the mark that he said, you know, Jayla, I'm gonna invest in your business. What do you think was the, you know, the swan song there that he came to step up and say, I'm in?
You know, I'm obviously just speculating because I have no idea. But I would think, knowing him now, maybe it's because I did make it past those obstacles in the beginning, and I think I was able to confidently communicate what it was I needed. And, you know, I think really one of the most important things with investors is you want to try to explain everything. It's really being concise and clear about how you, you know, tell your story and explain what happened. And I fortunately, I again, I don't even, it was such a blur being in there, but I think I did do that while I was in there. And maybe that's one of the things that, you know, he respected or appreciated and for some reason thought, you know, I don't know, that resonated with him, I guess.
Well, and I, you
and
know,
also,
you shared some of the things that, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, I was going to just say, and he also said his wife would love the product. That was the other big one. I think he, you know, he saw healthy, he saw alcohol, and he thought, oh, my wife will love this. So that's the other big one.
That's cute. Yeah, I've seen him do that where he's picked up a few products that are going, yep, my kids will love that, so I'm in. But
yep.
I think he does take a chance on entrepreneurs, not as so much as Mr. Wonderful, but, you know, and this wasn't meant to be picking apart Shark Tank, but, you know, a real important question, I think, for all of our listeners, you know, you have, I mean, you're so open about the hardship and just who would have thought that would have happened with your bottler, but do you feel, you know, has Shark Tank made the difference for you, or do you feel you still could have succeeded without the Shark Tank investment? Kind of curious. I mean, you probably would have, but I'm curious if you've ever thought of, gosh, what if Shark Tank hadn't been there? Would you still be in it to win it and getting it done? And it might have been a lot more difficult, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, I think I could have. You know, I think Shark Tank is not a long-term marketing plan. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? You get a huge surge in sales. Like, we did great online, and every time it re-airs, we do get a boost. So obviously that, you know, national exposure is huge, but it's not enough to just make your company grow, you know. And I think people assume a lot of times that just because you're on Shark Tank, you know, oh, everything must be great now. But we're actually raising another round of funding. Mark is doing a lot of PO financing, but we're growing and we can't really keep up with the sales and marketing support right now at retail. So we're just going on Circle Up to raise another round of funding. Just went live today, actually. And so, you know, I think, yeah, Shark Tank gave us a great boost. I think it helped accelerate things. But I think that, I think I could have done it without it. I do. I think it would have taken a little bit longer. It would have been a little bit slower. But, you know, we're still small and growing. It's such a crazy process. Part of our issue is being alcohol. There's so many licensing obstacles to deal with.
I would imagine.
You know, that's a big part of why our whole process is a little bit slower than other consumer goods. But yeah, I have to believe I still could have done it without Shark Tank, but no doubt it gave us a huge boost. And, you know, Mark's involvement added, you know, a ton to this. But I certainly think I know so many companies out there who didn't go on Shark Tank who get along just fine. But for us, it really did help. So.
No, really good advice. And again, I'm kind of curious for you for the future. I mean, I know you've got a couple of products within your family of wine spritzers. What, you know, wave a magic wand. Give us a sense, just to hear for our listeners, what would you hope the future would be for Bonafaire? I mean, are you going to come out with new products? Are you developing accessories, or are there new things coming down the pike? What's the future look like for you from your perspective?
Well, we did just launch the end of May. We launched a new aluminum single serve bottle for kind of poolside, beachside, which was actually Mark's initiative. It was his idea, and it's so far been going really, really well. We're working on developing some more varietals to come out with this fall. And, yeah, no, we haven't even gotten into accessories or anything like that yet. I think at this point we have so much growth to do within our existing accounts and geographically and online that, you know, I think staying focused is really important at this stage. We don't want to spread ourselves too thin. So I guess my vision would be, you know, by next year, our focus is really to saturate California and Texas with more retailers right now and then slowly start expanding into other states. Because alcohol, again, you have to be really hands-on at the retail level, especially with a new
right.
product that's kind of a new category. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
And I know, you know some states you can't skip to, because I used to do that with our corporate gift business. But, you know, it's interesting, I think, with a product like yours, when you start thinking about selling, do you find that the commercial and the wholesale side is much more effective, even though the price points are lower because you're selling wholesale? Or do you do you, because you guys have the online portal too, and I'm going to have you give people how they can reach you, but you do both retail or consumer sales and wholesale sales, is that right?
Yeah, we do, and it's really interesting because it's obviously two very different business, you know, or different sales channels. And what I found is that the consumers, the end consumers, the health conscious, kind of fitness conscious female wine drinkers, they totally understand what we're doing. They love it. So our online sales actually do really, really well. And at the retail side, we struggle with the wine buyers because they are trained in tasting wine and they don't really know what to think about Bonafaire because it doesn't really fit into a mold that they're used to kind of, you know, looking at. So, but being an alcohol company, you know, I've often thought, should we just focus on online sales and forget about retail? But I think being alcohol, ultimately, we have to go to retail. We want our customers to be able to run down the street on a Friday night and grab a bottle. You know, you can't just do online only. So, but, you know, I think the online seems to feel easier at times than retail.
Interesting. Well, yeah, you got retail store owners that probably don't know how to give you shelving. But, I mean, I can't even imagine. I'm just fascinated with what you do. And for any of our listeners, if they want to reach you, and especially if they want to order online, do you want to tell people how you'd like them to contact you?
Yeah, so our website is bonafaire.com, BonAffaire.com. And I love hearing from people or getting questions. Our email is hello@bonafaire.com. Or if you have any questions about the product or business or anything, it's always fun to hear and get people's feedback. So, and then we're available in Whole Foods throughout California and Texas.
That makes sense. I mean, and, you know, for you, it's like any final thoughts on what you want to share with any of our listeners about, you know, do's and don'ts or lessons learned, or it's like, you know, here's why I'm awesome kind of thing, because you guys have a great product. I taste the good, and we'll continue to taste the good. But any final thoughts you want to share, Dayla, because you've been great.
I guess, you know, the words I live by are patience and persistence. I just think in anything, you know, any of us are trying to do that's pushing past our comfort level, which is what kind of entrepreneurship or even growing within a company is all about, I find it takes a lot of patience, but it takes equal amounts of persistence and finding a balance between the two. And those are kind of still the words that I live by.
Those are pretty good. Those are pretty good. And it's like, we can't believe we're out of time. So I want to say thank you so, so much for being on our show and being our leading lady today, because you've been awesome and amazing. So thanks, Dayla. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners, as we're going to be back next week for another Women Leading the Way radio show. We're here every Friday at 2 p.m. Next Friday, I'm happy to say, our leading lady, because in celebration of Independence Day, is we are going to take a veteran focus, but our leading lady will be Denica Mathness, who is a retired U.S. Air Force owner of Denica Glam. And her topic, and what we're going to be talking about, is female veterans winning in the transition to entrepreneurship. So I know it'll be an interesting topic, and, you know, celebrating the idea that it's a Independence Day is exciting. So for all of our listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you again, Jayla, and to all of you out there, if you are a professional woman in business, we have one focus in Connected Women of Influence, and that is, you know, I think all of us could succeed more as small businesses and women professionals if we get out there and support each other. So have a great week, and thank you all for listening.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.